Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spoken Heard. This is Susan Dobie Chase, and today I am thrilled to bring you Justice Amir Gaines. Hello, sir. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I'm excited to be on the show.
How have you been? You're welcome. You're welcome. I was hoping that maybe you could let us know what you've been up to lately.
Yeah, so I'm an organizer in Providence, Rhode Island, so I've been doing a lot of work around racial justice and recently helped MC a march for racial justice out here, and then I've also been meeting up with some of my friends and other poets. We're preparing for a slam tournament called Femme Slam in Boston in 2 weeks, and so that's exciting. So we're just getting our poetry together, trying to really generate some new writing and community. So.
Oh, excellent, excellent. I know that you have a very vibrant slam community near Providence lately, and that you guys have all been doing such a wonderful job. I just am really impressed with the teams that have been coming out of there and the individual slam poets that are just so diverse and so dynamic, and I'm excited to hear what comes next for you.
Awesome, thank you. Yeah, no, I really love the community in Providence. Providence is where I started writing and sort of where I've learned to write, and so seeing the community grow and continue and develop has sort of been a beautiful process and a beautiful experience to be a part of that, so yeah.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And so many new voices coming out. I love that there are so many young people that are getting involved. And I think that that's a really big factor into allowing young people to have a voice. And truly, you know, there's ageism in our society as well. And it's important that we can listen to youthful voices as well as those who have been established. So, good luck to all of you, and to you too, Justice, because I think that what you're doing is super important. And in fact, I was wondering if maybe I can prevail upon you to read a piece of your work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and well, I guess you'll see what this poem's about.
Okay.
Have you ever gotten your teeth clinically whitened? It's a process that takes many months and multiple steps. First, to make a mold of your teeth, a clear-shaped container to hold you just right. Every step of the way, they will take a photo to track your progress. Next, they give you syringes filled with clear gel. Don't let its transparency fool you. It is, in fact, a bleach. Does all the things that bleach can do. Every day, you apply the clear gel to the clear container and fit it snugly onto your teeth for several hours. The final step of this process happens in the dentist chair. They open your mouth, cover your gums for your protection. Apply a stronger bleach. Shine a laser on it so all of the chemicals know to be awake. And you will sit there, becoming a brighter you. The process may have to be repeated several times to get the desired white. At no point in this process do they ask how your teeth got discolored in the first place, though they do tell you how to protect their new sheen. The process of whitening will hurt. Your teeth will be more sensitive. It will wear down your enamel. The bleach will burn your mouth, but you will have a more acceptable smile. Have you gotten your mind clinically whitened? It's a process that takes many months and multiple steps. First, they make a mold of the school, a prison-shaped container to hold you just right. Next, they give you books filled with clear text. Don't let its transparency fool you. It is, in fact, a bleach. Does all the things that bleach can do. Every day, you'll breathe the bleach-filled textbooks in the prison-shaped school and fit it snugly in your mind for several hours. The final step of this process happens in the testing chair. They place you in a room, take your belongings for your protection, place a stronger bleach in front of you, watch you with laser focus so all of the chemicals know to be awake. and you will sit there, becoming a brighter you. The process may have to be repeated several times to get the desired white. At no point in this process do they ask how you got discolored in the first place. But every step of the way, they will take a photo to track your progress. If you can't get a graduation picture, a mugshot will do. The process of whitening will hurt. You will be more sensitive. It will wear down your strength. The bleach will burn your history. But you will have a more acceptable smile. It's important to be accepted in society. To be accepted, you have to be acceptable. Your teeth are still too colored. The process will fix that thing. Trust the process. Follow the doctor's orders. Follow the teacher's instructions. Follow the policeman's commands. Smile when someone is talking to you. Drop that attitude for your protection. Speak proper English. They didn't bleach your mouth for you to talk so ghetto. Read your books. You're lucky they taught you to read at all. Why aren't you smiling? Why are you so sensitive? What, you think you woke now? Ain't no one told you to be awake. Better fall back asleep before the laser on your chest becomes a bullet. Trust the process will get the desired white no matter how many times it has to be repeated. Be grateful. This is about becoming a brighter you. If you want to be accepted, become a whiter you. Don't forget to smile. Thanks.
Wow. Wow. That's wonderful. I love the parallelism that you're using there with the same terms to be used in both pretexts. And that's an amazing piece. Where did that come from? How did you get to that?
Yeah, so very early on in this, I think it was actually the first week of 2017, I just started writing. I had never thought I would write a teeth poem, and I sort of wrote this sort of epic of, like, it was like a good, like, 18 pages of just poetry related to my mouth and, like, my oral history, so to speak. And the first part of it, the teeth whitening part of that was written in there. And then for me, the metaphor there, the parallelism was always apparent. And so when I adapted the poem, I decided to just make it very clear. I wrote the poem in sort of steps, but it came out of sort of this process of what does whitening mean and how does that look in different
mm-hmm.
parts of society. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love the concrete and the abstract that you throw in there. Just that's beautifully done. And to get that from 18 pages of material, I think that drowns a lot of people, is that there's so much that they want to say, but they don't know how to put it into the tiny little picture frame of a poem when there's such a vast amount of things that you want to say, right? How do you get around that? How do you get to a point where you trim away everything except what makes your idea powerful?
Yeah, I think it's a process of practice and trial and really knowing what you want to say. And I think for me, part of the power of poetry is that, right, I can make my own grammar. I'm not beholden to the rules of language in a way that
mm-hmm.
we're told we have to. And I think with when you have these big concepts, one, you know, sometimes you just have to accept that they're not all one poem. That was a big part for me. And the other thing is really saying, okay, how can I say something where someone will understand it even if I'm not using every word that
mm-hmm.
that you usually have to use, right? And I think part of the power of metaphors is being able to pull in all of these different ideas without having to explain every single one. And so, it's really figuring out what you want to say and how to say it in a way that people understand it without necessarily rambling. I ramble a lot generally, so poetry is the one time I try to chill out.
Have there been other poems that have come out of that 18 pages of your oral history?
Yeah, so there is a couple of smaller pieces that I've done at different events, but I haven't really refined anything else yet, and I'm actually planning
mm-hmm.
to go back and look at that and really figure out if I can use that material or refine that material to make it into maybe a small like book or collection or a small chapbook or a collection or something in the future.
Right, it's like buying more fabric than you need when you're a fashion designer and saving some of it for what you might need it for in the future instead of just throwing the rest of the bulk away. And I think that you know, there are so many different ways artistically that people do that all the time. But with writing, it seems to be, again, almost more difficult because there's so much that you want to say as a human being, and yet you don't know how all the pieces fit together. It's not a complete puzzle. It's just got the pieces, and you need to figure out how you want to put it together. And that's kind of difficult.
Yeah, and I think it's especially so, like, thinking of the different parts that you want to get in. And, like, one conflict I've had sometimes is you know, I'm Black and I'm trans, and sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm just writing a Black poem, or, oh, I'm just writing a trans poem. But in reality, all of my poems are both. But it's sometimes hard to be writing about a specific subject and not feel like I'm leaving something out. And I feel like a lot of poets who have sort of these intersecting identities or different identities sometimes feel this pressure to write into all of them at the same time, even if that's not what a specific poem is calling for. Yeah, and I think it's interesting because with that piece, that longer piece, and with some of my other work, I write longer pieces that sort of get to all of these different nuances of life, but then I'm like, okay, this is about 10 minutes and I need it to be 3. So I have to figure out how to cut it down.
Yeah. And again, that I think is one of the hardest parts. I want to quickly, before we move on too far, apologize. I didn't mean to use an incorrect pronoun earlier. I'm not sure exactly how you'd like me to phrase the gender fluidness, and I'm sorry if I started out the show by using a pronoun that you'd rather not use.
Oh, I appreciate that. So I'm gender fluid, and I consider myself a trans woman, so it's a very interesting sort of dynamic of how I present myself and how I feel versus how other people project gender onto me, and not necessarily getting it just in general. And so it's through, in my poetry, I write a lot about being both a trans woman, being trans feminine, but I also try to write a lot about gender fluidity because it tends to be a topic that people don't necessarily hear about as much or don't necessarily understand quite as much. And so I appreciate that, though. You know, man, feminine sort of pronouns are fine for me as well. And so, yeah, but thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. You want to tell us a little bit about what you usually are talking about when you talk about being gender fluid?
Yeah. So for me, the term gender fluid pretty much means, you know, your gender may change, or it's not static. You're not one gender all the time. And for me, I sort of use that term to describe not as much my daily experience anymore, but more of my experience of gender overall, where there have definitely been times in my life where it was more of a daily fluctuation, or throughout my life, I felt that I've had different genders. And it's sort of been a round trip for me, whereas I definitely believe, like, as a child, I knew I was a girl, and now I know I'm a woman, but there were different changes in there throughout that. And sort of gender fluid is a way to both experience that sometimes I do feel differently. It's more rare these days, but also that just my in total experience of gender has been different, has changed and has shifted and has been fluid.
And so you knew that you identified more as a woman, even as a small child. How did that, I mean, if I'm asking questions that are too private, just let me know. But I'm interested in how that played out for you as a child and a developing young adult.
Yeah, so I think, like, as a kid, I had no language around any sort of queerness. And so for me, it was something that was always in the back of my head and, like, was something that I always felt but never knew how to vocalize, so I never vocalized it. And I grew up and went through some hard times, and so at some point I kind of just let it go personally because I never knew how to vocalize it. And all throughout sort of middle school, high school, adolescence generally, I was feeling sort of weird. I didn't really know what was off about the way I was interacting with the world. And then when I got to college is when I actually discovered the language around being trans, just the language around being transgender in general. And that made me have to sort of recalled a lot of my childhood and was like, oh, wow. One, all of these reasons in middle school and high school, the reason those things didn't make sense was because I was trying to be something I wasn't. I was trying to be like a boy, mm-hmm. and it wasn't working out. And I was never really, my brother-in-law once told me like I wasn't good at being a boy when I came out to him. And I was like, yep. I was like, yo, good. I'm happy you saw it. And then I remembered sort of as a child who I was. And I do end up writing a little bit about that too, about sort of what it meant to know then, then sort of forget or like force myself to forget that and to be remembering now. And that's mm-hmm. that's been sort of an experience that I continually have to process of what does it mean that I did know and then I let go of it, that I tried to let go of it so that I can be like, quote unquote, yes. normal. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How difficult to do all the growing up that you need to do in those ages, but also be feeling like you're unknowingly almost stifling who you truly are while you're trying to grow into who you are. And I imagine that's so difficult.
Yeah, I have a good community now, though. That's really, I think, helping me. And I'm very fortunate to be a trans person who has a lot of trans people who surround me and to have a lot of love and care with other folks in my life who, you know, can relate. And not all trans folks, not all trans women have that support. So I'm fortunate.
Very good. I'm really glad to hear it. We're about halfway through the show, and I was hoping maybe I could get you to read something else.
Yes. And this poem is more in response to sort of that intersectionality being Black and trans that I was talking about earlier. So.
Mm-hmm.
Grieving is asphalt. Grieving is strobe light. Grieving is church pews. Do you know what it's like to be jealous of your own grieving? June holds so much weight, heavy with martyr-made stains. Package grieving into a prayer. Press the post button on Facebook. 2 years ago today, a Black sanctuary got stained with Black blood, and I feel the heavens falling and ask God for. 1 year ago this week, a queer sanctuary got stained with Black blood, and I find myself bleeding and ask God for today. Blue blood got acquitted for staining the street with Black blood, and I couldn't muster a tear. I couldn't find rage or anger or even a prayer to ask God for blood. June holds so much blood and pride and Black. And proud, and blood dries black. Blood becomes the hymn I shake my ass to. Blood becomes the savior I drop to my knees for. Blood be the praise, grieving be the sanctuary. I see the cross red and thorned, Jesus with dreads and a crop top. I see the rainbow, and God promised not to flood us again. And I see posts and prayers. And please, all the rage and tears and grief, and none are bleeding for my kind of holy, but my kind are swimming in blood. Another trans woman was found dead 2 days ago. Another Black trans woman was found dead next week. Another Black trans woman wasn't found. You know what it's like to be jealous of your own grieving, to grieve for the church pews and the strobe light and the asphalt, to have your casket lie in a sanctuary, for them to hold the funeral without you, to be Black and queer, but trans, to know if you die, your Black death, your queer death, your holy undoing, your blood still isn't worthy enough to make a Christ out of you.
Wow. And once again, I love the structure of what you write, as well as you know, certainly the content is beautiful, and you say it so perfectly. But I really love how you structure your ideas. Does that just come to you naturally?
Yeah, it depends. It depends on the piece. And so this piece, I say the structure of my poems does come to me naturally, but then, like, I've definitely learned to go back and edit. And so this this was sort of not reordered, but yeah, it was reordered. So there was different places and different pieces, and for the most part, the structure was how I had it originally, but I actually, some of my friends give really good feedback about, okay, this poem is super powerful the way it originally was. These are like things you can do. And so for me, at least, one of the most valuable things I have as a poet is just a community that is willing to give me honest and constructive feedback so that I can continue to grow and continue to help them grow. Yeah. And so that piece, which was written during the Day of Providence Pride, which I spoke at, was sort of, I had to just figure out how I was feeling about speaking at Pride, because I'm very critical of Pride, and that week in particular was, you know, the anniversary of Charleston, the anniversary of Pulse, and right after Philando Castile's Cops Got Acquitted. So it was all of these different things that I had to sort of think about. And I'm so thankful that I have friends who are able to say, okay, this is already beautiful. I'm already crying. How can you make it, you know, even stronger? And so that really helped.
How much editing do you usually go through before you find that you have to tell yourself that it's finished?
It depends on the poem. There's some poems that I write and they're just raw, and they're more for me. They're more catharsis. And so I have to do a lot of editing if I want to perform those, if I want to perform those at a competition or at a specific event where I feel like I want them to be more polished. Some things I write and I write them and that's it. And so I might do little mini edits, but for the most part, they're pretty solid. And then there's pieces that like I wrote way back when, and I perform them solidly for a year, and then I'm like, okay, wait, I feel a little different. I'm going to change this now. And I'm working on one of my pieces like that right now, where I had performed it pretty solidly for about a year and a half, but now I'm going to go back and try to change it a little bit.
Good. And I wanted to go back to what you were saying about Pride and about being kind of critical of Pride. Do you want to talk to that a second?
Yeah. So, you know, just as I feel that Pride, it started from like trans women of color, poor like queer folks in New York who were, you know, rioting against the police, and I think it was really about structural violence and not just this celebration of ourselves, but also this fight for us to be free and for our liberation. And I feel like, you know, in a lot of ways across the country, Pride has become sort of this corporate celebration of how can we be diverse versus how can we actually like create inclusion. And I feel like when you see dozens of police or like whole squadrons of police surrounding a parade or being in the parade, to me that is sort of it's sort of blasphemous in what Pride was, where it was like we were facing violence and we continue to face violence at the hands of police, and yet now we're relying on them or we're including them as if that's not still occurring. And so I think with my work in both organizing and poetry, it's hard to support sort of that contradiction that's very dangerous for a lot of trans women of color, and it's very dangerous for a lot of queer folks.
When you perform around Providence, where do you usually perform?
So I tend to perform at Providence Poetry Slam, which meets the first and third Thursday of every month except August at ASC 20. It's a beautiful space. We just celebrated 25 years in September, so it's been going strong for a while. And that's sort of, that's the main place when I perform at events every now and then. Yeah.
Good. And you mentioned that you're going to go to a new tournament. Is that nearby to Providence?
Yeah. So that's in Boston, which is relatively close to Providence. It's October 20th through 22nd, called Femme Slam. It was organized by these incredible poets in Boston area. And I'm just really excited to be there and to be a part of to be a part of that, the first inaugural, hopefully, like, FemSlam.
Nice. I hope that it has continued success. And, you know, I know that it takes a little while sometimes for people to grow into something brand new, but it sounds like a wonderful, wonderful way of dealing with, you know, what is a subgroup of society that sometimes still has a hard time finding a place, unfortunately, given the constructs that we think of when we think of even queer, just kind of like falls now into part of the spectrum that now gender fluid, the term has taken up. So I'm glad you're doing that. I really do. And my compliments to the organizers. I noticed too that you had competed this past year in the Women of the World Poetry Slam. How was it being there?
Yeah, it was great. I think the slam was organized incredibly well. I met incredible people. It was sort of great to be a part of that experience as a trans woman. And there's been a few trans women who have sort of trailblazed that path. And being in Dallas was a little bit hard. Dallas was Texas, and so it was kind of hard being trans in Dallas. I'm not going to lie, but it was a good experience.
Well, good. I'm really glad. What happened in Dallas that made it difficult?
You know, it was the reception to my poetry. I sort of usually know, and a lot of my work where I explicitly talk about being trans was met differently than I'm used to. So, yeah, and that's really there was just that feeling. I don't really know even how to explain it. Of, you know, people are still getting used. I don't know if people were still getting used to me being at that type of slam, but it was interesting.
Well, I'm really glad that you did that. I really am. And trailblazers are needed. And so thank you. Thank you for that. Well, coming into the end of the show, I wanted to thank you so much for being here today. Your work is magnificent.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and your voice is so important, Justice. Keep doing what you do because we're all better off because of it. And now reading at the
Thank
end of the
you.
Show, Justice Amy
awesome.
Gang, you're welcome.
God killed the dinosaurs. And by God, I mean Mother Nature. And by Mother Nature, I mean Earth. And by Earth, I mean there is no good word for what to call this planet or this universe or this dimension. No word for what to call all that is. No word that man did not create. God killed the dinosaurs, or Mother Nature, or Earth, or the planet of this dimension's universe. We are scared of storms and heat and tides and the destruction we've wrought. Climate change is a selfish fear, a human fear, a self-righteous concern. And like all things on this planet, in this universe, in this dimension, we want to claim ownership. We want to be the creators and destroyers. We want to be God. We always want to be God. We always want to satisfy our inability to swallow how impotent we are. Do you think the clouds know your name? Do you think the waves know your eyes? Do you think the heat cares to call you kin? Maybe before. Maybe some of us. Most religions have a flood. Most religions were written after the flood. Most beliefs became believed after the apocalypse. God killed the dinosaurs. We found the bones. We unburied the grave. And don't they look like us? Don't they look like peoples who failed to see how small they were? There is no good word for what to call retribution against an ungrateful creation. No word that man did not create. Prolicide. Revocation, global warming. The dinosaurs are dead. God killed them, or Mother Nature, or Earth, or this planet. And we say it fears us. We think we're destroying it. How arrogant are we? How afraid?
Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. You can look up Justin Amir Gaines on Facebook. And until then, you know, Providence Slam is really important and going on. So take a listen to that. This is Susan Dobie Chase. This has been Spoken Heard. Tune in next week for another enlightening poet. And until then, be kind to one another.